How do you stay in shape, man?
Your genetics load the gun, but your lifestyle pulls the trigger.
What the heck do we do when it comes to getting solid information for our health and longevity of ourselves and our families?
That which is meant to protect us is actually weakening us. Are we taking supplements, just creating expensive pee?
Well, beautiful, man. Well, thank you for doing this, dude.
Of course, man. It's my pleasure, man.
These crazy ideas I come up with. A podcast in the sauna. It was an idea I had maybe 2 years ago. Here we are.
Yeah, man. You made it work. You know, you got some melt-proof equipment, you know? It's awesome, man.
Do you sauna much?
Man, I wish I did more. You know, like, we have one, but, you know, the voltage isn't correct. We got to get that fixed. But, you know, I do more of the cold plunging.
Okay.
Than a sauna right now. But okay. I do spend a lot of time just out in the sun.
Okay. You know, okay.
Which is, that's why we came here.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay. And the sun, why do you spend a lot of time in the sun?
I mean, it's one of the key ingredients for life on Earth. You know, it's such a special thing.
Mm.
And, you know, for me, of course, just being very science-driven, just looking at all of the mental and physiological benefits, you know, it's one of the catalyst for building your sex hormones, for example. You know, that pathway with the cholesterol getting converted over, you know, it's so fascinating. But, you know, I kind of did a dictation on it a little while ago. You know, I'm talking about vitamin D, right? So that vitamin D pathway. And it's not just the sun, it's the interaction with our organs, right? So, because what it does is it creates like a precursor, right? Interacting with cholesterol in our system, the sunlight, this photosynthesis process, like we're kind of like a plant that got up and walked around, you know? But then it's getting shuttled to, you know, there's a conversion that happens with your liver. There's a conversion that happens with your kidneys. So we can get all the sun that we want to, but if our organs aren't healthy, we're going to be lacking in being able to build these really important complex compounds that really create vitality. You know what I mean? But so since I'm stacking conditions with my nutrition,
you take vitamin D as well? Supplement? Or just get it from the...
I don't really need to.
Or just fish or like the sun? And
yeah. I mean, of course, there's some plant sources as well. It's D2 though.
Okay.
It's not D3 if we're talking about like, you know, mushrooms or something like that. Because I, you know, going through these different... I've experimented oftentimes at least a year with just about any nutrition protocol you can imagine. You know, I've been in this field for 20 years. And so, you know... looking for it through a vegan vegetarian lens, you know, it's like, okay, I'll do the mushrooms. But again, it doesn't matter if your organs aren't healthy to do that conversion, right? From the D2 to go to D3. So, but yeah, we can find it there. There is kind of an interesting source with plants, but predominantly, yeah, you're going to look for things that kind of resemble the sun.
Yeah.
You know, like an egg yolk.
That's funny, yeah.
For example, you know, it just might have some of those compounds you're looking for in regards to like vitamin D. But vitamin D doesn't work in a vacuum. And that's part of the problem I have with, you know, going straight for a isolated supplement version of something.
Yeah.
In particular, if it's a synthetic version. Like, for example, a lot of folks don't realize this, but the vast majority of vitamin C supplements on the market is made from genetically modified cornstarch and or corn syrup.
Wow.
Right? So when you're getting those little packets at the checkout, you know, those are coming from, and oftentimes, again, genetically modified. Most of it's coming from China. You know, they kind of dominate the market with that. But we don't realize that. We just think, oh, this is vitamin C. And so I just shared a study recently. It was a analysis, and again, it was published in a major peer-reviewed journal, finding that folks who were consuming synthetic vitamin C supplements had about 2.5 times higher incidence of developing kidney stones. Right? So, and then another study that was conducted found that there was an increase in the thickness of the arterial walls of men who were taking these vitamin C supplements on a consistent basis. So there's a big difference between vitamin C, the synthetic idea, and we can almost match it up synthetically to what is naturally occurring, but it's not the same thing. And it doesn't have all the cofactors and really the intelligence that food has.
It's artificial. I'm going to get into supplements too, because I got a little beef with supplements that I'd love to hear your thoughts about. But, you know, Sean, thank you again for being here. I'm such a fan of your work in so many ways. You know, you're science-driven. You know, you don't run away from the science. You're open-minded. You have this high ethical standard and moral compass, and you keep things fun. You're a storyteller and a little bit of a comedian too. I heard a joke you had said on some podcast. You were saying you were talking about fat. People think eating fat makes you fat. That's like saying eating blueberries would make you blue. And I laughed entirely too much from that joke. But it's hilarious. You just have such a unique lane. And I'm so honored to have you here. I'm curious, though, what was the catalyst inside of your story that got you into health and wanting to heal people?
Well, you just said it, man. It was creating an inroads. You know, we're existing in science. Like, science is just happening. We are a part of science. We're a part of nature. And it's a language to describe things, right? And so it's just an awareness of what's happening versus kind of being ignorant to all that's going on and your place in it all. And so, of course, like that, I had science on mute. You know, I had my connection to life and to nature on mute. And as a result, my health, you know, and pretty much everybody in my family had some form of a chronic disease, which is not abnormal, by the way. The CDC just published new data. 60% of Americans have at least one chronic debilitating illness. 40% have two or more, right? So that's the state that we're in right now. And over 70% of our citizens are now overweight or obese. And I saw this highlighted in my family in particular, you know, with probably about 80% of my family members being obese. And, you know, I was, quote, the skinny kid in my family. And my brother and sister were also on the heavier side. But I had my dysfunction show up in a different way. Because that's the thing. Everybody's, even if you have the same parents, like, you're going to have a different genetic expression, right? So this is talking about epigenetics, right? And I have a different father than my brother and sister as well. So I had a proclivity towards arthritic conditions. And so when I was 20 years old, I was diagnosed with a so-called incurable degenerative disc disease. And I had degenerative bone disease as well. So my bones were deteriorating. So much so that at track practice at Lafayette High School in St. Louis, shout out to everybody in St. Louis.
Yes, sir.
I was doing a 200-meter time trial and my hip broke. You know, so my iliac crest and my hip just broke off just from running.
Wow.
And I didn't fall. It wasn't a trauma. It was just my body was so brittle. And so my disposition or my genetic, and by the way, talking with the person who really pushed that into our popular lexicon, the term epigenetics, epi meaning above, genetic meaning control, is Dr. Bruce Lipton. And
yeah, I know him well, good friend, biology of belief.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I love that man so much. It's one of those things when you talk with him or when you learn from him, you can't see the world through the same lens again. And he shared with me in a conversation and talking about, because we believe that we have genes for diseases. And he was like, whoa, there aren't any genes for diseases, Sean. Be very, very careful in your language. And of course, he's like, there are a tiny fraction of true genetic defects. But for the most part, we're talking about, for example, if we say we have a genetic predisposition towards having diabetes, right? What that is, we're talking specifically about type 2 diabetes. Let's just start here. With type 2 diabetes, we have a condition where there was an onset of it. It used to be called adult onset diabetes, right? You weren't born with that condition. Something happened and it created an expression or manifestation of the disease. And so what it is your genes are getting read differently to help your body to continue functioning under unideal circumstances, right? And so the unideal circumstance is a body that was never designed to associate with so much abnormal sugar, right? So 1900s, average Westerner is consuming 4 to 6 pounds of sugar, right? So just before that, you know, late 1800s. Today, we're talking about...
A year, 4 to 6 pounds a year.
A year, annually. And today, we're talking about somewhere in the ballpark of 70 pounds of added sugar. We're talking added, not the naturally occurring sugar in addition. That will put the average person over 100 pounds of sugar consumed every year. And so with that amount of sugar and the impact that it has on your liver and your insulin and insulin sensitivity and all these things, your body is going to make intelligent adjustments to keep you alive under those unideal circumstances. So it's not that your genes cause the disease, Matter of fact, we haven't found any genes that cause a disease. We found genes associated with diseases, but they're not causative of diseases. And that's part of the problem. Even recently we had, you know, somebody who's a so-called health official saying that, you know, obesity, our obesity epidemic, in particular with children, this is a result of genetics. And it's so, at this point, 2023, as much as we know now, to say something like that is so negligent and it's disempowering. It's framed in a way to be empowering because it's like, it's making it not your fault.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we don't want to create this kind of shame culture. But if we don't equip people with the knowledge of how did this expression actually happen, because your genes didn't do this to you, there's certain epigenetic controllers. And one of the things we could talk about today, there's epicaloric controllers as well, how your body handles calories that you consume that are going to determine how your body's going to be expressed. Because if it was truly a genetic problem, because childhood obesity has tripled in the last 30 to 40 years, tripled. If it was genetic, we would have been like this. Something happened, because we're talking about a sentence in the grand scheme of human evolution. It's only been a sentence where we have this high rate of obesity, in particular with children, right? All this other time, we weren't like this. So if it was evolution takes time, you know? And so to circle it back to my story and how this kind of catalyzed me, you know, pain is a good teacher.
It's a
fantastic teacher. And I do believe that we can learn through insight and inspiration, but pain is, you know, it's a masterclass. And so being in this condition to where, you know, I'm inundated with disease. You know, when I received this diagnosis, I was living in Ferguson, Missouri, was trying to finish my undergraduate degree. And it was a struggle just doing that because I didn't have a reference point. I didn't have examples of like, I ended up being like a super duper senior just because just like kept dropping classes. Like I didn't have a template or roadmap or a model to follow because I'd never known anybody like in my personal life that had went to college, let alone graduated, right? And so I'm trying to create a new pathway, break the cycle. But, you know, my health was struggling. You know, my vision of success and what my life can be was just in such disarray. And what changed everything, man, and to make it very simple, after I'd been outsourcing my health so long to my physicians who meant well, but they're literally telling me that I can't help you. This is incurable. And every time I'd see a new physician, they give me a new prescription.
Yeah.
Right. And so I'm going in for help because I don't want to live like this in this condition. I'm 20 years old, you know, 20, 21 going through this process. And by the way, my dormant fat genes, they kicked on. You know, I went from being the skinny kid in my family to joining the club. You know, I was knocking on the door being 200 pounds.
Interesting.
And, you know, when I see pictures of myself, like, it's just, I look like, I can barely recognize myself. But ultimately, everything changed when I realized that I had been giving my potential away to other people. You know, I'd really bought into their definition of what was possible for me. And I remembered, and we can all do this, whether it's with ourselves. Or whether it's through our perception of someone else who values and sees us, I brought into my, and I didn't do this on purpose, it just, my awareness went to my grandmother, who taught me the value of education, who always was just, she just would reiterate and just kind of push this idea into my psychology that I was going to be successful. I was going to do something special. I was special. And here I was hiding out in this one bedroom apartment, mattress on the floor, in chronic pain, taking all these medications over the counter and prescription just to sleep at night because the pain was so bad. And I was just like, this, my life does not match up to what I believed it could be. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to talk with Tony Robbins a bit, and he talked about how when your life conditions don't match your blueprint, that's suffering, right? And when the life conditions matches your blueprint, that's happiness, essentially. But here's the thing, when you have this disconnection between these two, you can either change your life conditions or you can change your blueprint. And you can instantly change where you are and how you feel about yourself and the world around you. And for me at the time, again, unconsciously, I decided that this was my time to stop outsourcing my health and to take responsibility.
Beautiful.
And so I began to furiously, ravenously study everything about health that I possibly can. But it started with a change in my perception, because here's the thing. The solutions that have me sitting here with you today already existed.
Yeah,
I just, my vision, the lens I was seeing life through didn't allow me to see them, right? So within a matter of weeks, I ended up at like a Wild Oats store in St. Louis, and a friend of mine who I'd known for years, she took me there, and it's just like, I thought they was weird, you know, her and her chiropractor friends, you know, and I was just like, but she took me to this place, and I see these books, and I'm like, and I'm looking for my condition, because it says prescription, you know, something like nutrition prescription or something like that. And it's this really thick book. And I went and I was like, there's studies on degenerative disc disease and this thing could benefit? Like, why didn't anybody tell me about this? Wow. And so I just began to flood my body. Eventually, there's a lot that happens in the gap, but just to close off the story, I just began to provide my body with all of the raw materials that it needed to rebuild me.
Wow.
You know, and your body, our body is remarkably intelligent, far more intelligent than any person that's ever existed. And that's number one. Number two, when I got well, I became so inspired to inform and empower and provide access to other people who are told the same thing, that you can't be helped. This is your lot in life. There's nothing you can do about it.
Wow.
And, you know, through that, I shifted my coursework back to science in school. But
Where was it before?
I started off science. I went pre-med.
Okay.
Then, because I hated science, because of the visceral connection. And this leads all the way back to the tie-in point, the final point, which is I saw why it turns off so many people is because it doesn't seem, it doesn't connect. There's no connective tissue. When I'm in my biology class and we're looking at a cell, and we're looking at the organelles and the mitochondria, and you know, we're looking at the nucleus and all this stuff, we're not really being informed like, hey, this is in you, and all these parts we're looking at are made from the food that you eat. Right. And so you get to determine how your cells are going to actually be structured. Right. And so I made it a mission to create that connective tissue for people through the lens of humor, through the lens of storytelling, through the lens of, most importantly, empowerment.
That's it.
You know, and just kind of turning people's lights on to all this stuff.
That's it. Yeah, sovereignty is so important, especially over your own health. I talk to my physician all the time, my physician being myself. And I think people need to be their own doctors. I think it's good to do the studies. Most people probably don't have time, so they should follow people like you, people who have the background. And look at different sources. You said a lot there, and one of the most important things that I took from that can be framed within an analogy. And it was about your point about epigenetics. You know, lifestyle versus genetics, nature versus nurture. And you know, it was a cool analogy I heard was your genetics load the gun, but your lifestyle pulls the trigger. We don't have to activate those genes, the genetic manifestations don't have to happen. We are in control by taking sovereignty, taking control of what we put in our mouths. It's super important. One thing, when you got in here and got into the sauna, how you feeling, by the way? You
feel good?
Feeling
feel
detox good. You feeling
the sweat is on?
Okay. Well, I'm looking at you, man, and you look in shape. You look like you could probably step on stage of a bodybuilding contest.
Oh, come on now.
You're so busy. You run a successful business, podcast, you're an author, you got a family. How do you stay in shape, man? Most people say, I don't have the time to stay in shape. What do you do?
I'm going
to
be, since I'm here with you, man, just being 100, I'm in 5% of the shape that I could be. You know, I'm doing so little these days because I've been so, the past couple of years, obviously the world has been pretty crazy. As our friend Michael Beckwith says, the world has taken a nightmare pill. And so I've been so focused on education and empowerment, but I've been doing the bare minimum and a little more for myself. But I really haven't invested in myself like I normally do. But with that said, I'm fueling myself up for my mission. And there's seasons for everything, by the way.
100%.
You know, so I've been training. Even on my mind while I'm training is service and being as strong as possible to handle any turbulence, being as strong as possible to reach into somebody's heart. And so that's what I've been doing. And it's only been, you know, I'll probably train 3 times a week.
Okay, that's solid. Full body?
You know, a lot of times I'll split.
Okay.
And then I'll sneak a day in here or there, but I've been doing a lot more hiking with my family. It's another thing. So we've dedicated that time hiking together and just outside of that, just playing. You know, just having a culture. We have a culture of play in my family.
Yeah, I noticed that. I watched the Instagram, the stories, the reels. It's great. I saw you freestyling the other day. Yeah. It's pretty good, man.
Thank you. So that's the thing that we do. You know, we'll just break out into like a dance competition or, you know, seemingly coordinated dance, like, you know, or, you know, we're freestyling, just embedding these cultural pieces into my kids and just seeing them flourish with it is so cool.
You mentioned two things. You mentioned hiking, walking, and dancing. I mean, I'm a nerd. I like to look at the studies, probably not as much as you do, but I'm obsessed with how we can live our best lives, how we can become our best selves, how we can be healthy, every cell in our body working optimally. And so I always harken back to not only our ancient past, but current societies known as blue zones. And for people that don't know, blue zones are places on the earth where people live the longest, healthiest, happiest lives. The term was popularized by Dan Buettner. He went around and found these different cultures, Okinawa, Nicoya, Costa Rica, Loma Linda. And so going back to the exercise thing, they don't really have squat racks and, you know, treadmills and, you know, they're not doing these crazy CrossFit exercises. They're moving, they're walking, they're dancing, they're squatting, you know, in the garden.
Yeah.
How important is that?
Yeah, it's the most important thing. We were just talking about this using the stairs coming up here. You know, like we want to train, ideally, if you're talking about longevity, for functionality, things that you'll actually be doing. Can we squat, you know, 300, 400, 500 pounds? Like my oldest son, he can squat, you know, probably about 500 pounds now.
Yeah.
Can we do that? Yes, we can. Yeah. Are we designed to, or is it something that our genes expect us to do? Hmm. Not so much. Hmm. Our genes expect us to walk. Hmm. We're bipedal. Like it's one of the things that we evolved to do when we're engaging in these activities. We're signaling, these are internal signals, going back to epigenetics and the biology belief. You know, there are certain like antennas essentially with our cells. And I remember in science, we were taught essentially that the nucleus is the brain of the cell, right? But there's a process called enucleation. You could remove the nucleus and the cell can continue living for a nice stint of time and maintain a lot of its functions. It can't necessarily add in new functions, but it can continue living. If we take your brain out, that's it. You know, you're toast. There is no more life. And so believing that it's the brain of the cell is a little bit of a misconception or misnomer. And in reality, you know, when we really look at the function of a cell, our cells have the equivalent of, you know, these receptors and antennas that are sensing the environment and determining what our cells are doing, in particular what their mitochondria are doing, what they're making, what kind of, you know, new proteins or neurotransmitters, like it's all going to be based on our body's perception of the environment. And so getting these environmental inputs, for example, when you're walking, you're signaling to the environment that I am a person of vitality and need. I'm a contributor to the world around me. I'm moving. I'm functional. And I don't want to put this in terms of like our definition as humans, as who's valuable and who's not. I'm talking about in nature, right? Because like I was watching with my kids, you know, some wildlife stuff, right? And I saw this lion is trying to take out, you know, water buffalo, but the water buffalo partners came over and it was a problem, you know? So the lion was already very thin and he was alone, right? And so his template, his potential right now is very shaky of him being able to survive. Because of these signals, right? Communities lacking now. And also, you know, he's not gonna be as active or have the strength to pull that water buffalo down. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's a internal and external signal going both ways as to what we're capable of. And the same thing with, you know, with sex and sexual performance and sex hormones. It's one of those things, truly, like we're having an epidemic right now that a lot of people aren't talking about with fertility. And
testosterone too, right?
Yeah, testosterone has been going down essentially 1% every year for the last 50 years.
Wow.
And you add that up, like it's scary. And also male sperm count is down about the same, about 1% each year. Miscarriages, same thing. Like, and it's
why?
It's,
what is this for? What is it, the food?
Oh man, you're gonna open up the
the floodgates.
The can of worms here. But you know, there are all these. You know, it's so funny, like life imitating art, art imitating life. There's these films about, you know, the lack of ability to reproduce as a species, you know, whether it's Handmaid's Tale or you know, the Children of Men, I believe another one was.
That was it.
But you know, like, we're actually living this out. Wow. And right now, the fertility business, the medicine component, this is a multi-billion-dollar business now. Hmm. It is booming. Hmm. And with such poor results, you know, some people do end up getting the result they want, which is to have a family. Hmm. And it's something is so primitive. It's so deeply embedded in our desire as a species. Like, if we get just to the primal side of humanity, or all of life is to reproduce and to carry on the species. Hmm. And so to not be able to do that, it creates such turmoil, mental distress. And so finding solutions, you're always grateful to find them. But the stories of people who didn't find a solution are not talked about enough. And there's so many of these people. And it's unfortunate because, again, this business is utilizing all of these systems of drugs and medicines and therapies and various surgeries to try to manipulate the system instead of removing the cause, right? And so we'll just take this one example. And I wish we could throw the study up for everybody to see, but if people are watching the YouTube version, maybe you can throw it up.
Yeah, yeah.
But a study was just published just a couple of years ago looking at the connection between the amount of steps taken per day and testosterone levels. And the researchers found that 8,000, being north of 8,000 steps a day, the study participants had significantly higher testosterone levels than the control group, or the kind of the placebo group, who weren't advocated to walk as much, than their sperm count. But even at 4,000 steps, they had a significant level, but there was a mighty jump once we reached 8,000 steps. And so now we take that piece with fertility and sperm count, and we say, hey, you know what? We're actually the most sedentary population in the history of humanity today. Do you think that there's a connection? And doctors are not prescribing steps per day to their patients. They're saying, hey, we've got this new infertility treatment. Right? So the basic things that our genes expect us to do are not the things that are recommended. And you know this. This is our system is really based on, you know, it's based on sick care. It's based on problems and the treatment of symptoms and not removing the causes of those symptoms. If we actually remove the causes of our epidemics of chronic diseases, these businesses that are, again, matter of fact, the United States, last year, we spent $4.2 trillion in healthcare.
Yeah.
We're talking about, it's the biggest, it's the biggest moneymaker and the biggest debt. Like, our society is nudging towards bankruptcy. We've already hit that ceiling. But the question is, like, who do we owe money to, like, as a country? You know, like, we're going in debt. Mainly because of the poor health of our citizens.
And these, we spend so much money and the outcomes aren't, we don't have outcomes to show for it.
Yeah.
Right? Some of the poorest in the, especially in peer countries, I think we're the worst. Interesting. How you feeling?
I feel good, man.
I don't want to push it. I can stay here longer, but I want to keep it healthy. Right. I don't want anybody to pass out, mostly me. So we're going to step out the sauna, get some little hydration, get a little coconut water and rehydrate. Let's How's go. That sound?
Sounds great.
Cool. How you feeling after that session?
Feel great, man.
Feel good?
Yeah.
Feel light?
Yeah, feel really good.
So this is the hydration session where, you know, we got the little foot bath, little Epsom salt. You know, we get relaxed and go a little deep. We call it the hydration session. I know you're big, you know a lot about food. You're an expert in that area. But how about hydration? How important is it to be properly hydrated? I read a study that said that I think at least if you're just 2% dehydrated, you lose focus, your attention can wander. Dehydration also, I think, is linked in some studies to like colon cancer. How important is it to stay hydrated?
Yeah. That study's in my book. It was published in Medicine and Science and Sports and Exercise. Just a 2% drop in our body's baseline hydration level can create all kinds of cognitive dysfunction, you know, disrupt our reaction time, our ability to process data, grammatical things, you know, we just basically get dumber, you know, and everybody's looking for this super nootropic, this thing to like give me the energy and cognitive performance I want. The primary thing is water. You know, your brain is mostly made of water. It's like we say that, but we don't really get it. You know, upwards of 80% of the human brain, depending on what stage of life we're in, is made of water. It's the primary macronutrient. For human health, you know, just being in my nutrition classes in college, we were like pounded into these macronutrients, these three macronutrients, fats, carbohydrates, and proteins. But what was left out of the conversation is alcohol is a macronutrient and also water, you know, and water is, again, your body, all of the processes the body is doing, even our mitochondria making energy, it's all happening in a water medium. And so that's why it affects so much so quickly when we're dehydrated. And I saw your eyes look like when I said alcohol being a macronutrient.
I wanted to get into that. Yeah, go ahead though.
So, but just to finish off with water really quickly, if we understand that our hormones, like people talk about these things again, you know, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, you know, things like oxytocin, our stress-related hormones, norepinephrine, epinephrine, you know, adrenaline. All of these things are operating in a water medium. Your hormones are enabling your cells to talk to each other. Without water, the process breaks down. It is that important. And so, you know, I've really been wanting to be a champion for water and for hydration. And I've weaved that in so much into my content over the years. And I love it because I've seen, you know, friends and colleagues integrating that. I worked on this idea. And it was first inspired by David Wolf of this inner shower or inner bath. And so I thought that it made cognitive sense to kind of put it into a story form and just think about how we, you know, most people, if they're going out into the world, you take a bath, you know, take a shower, a bath. And we are so focused about this outer appearance, but our health really is from the inside out. And so in particular, in the morning, when you wake up, this is, for most people, the longest stint they've gone without hydration. And so you're more dehydrated. Thus, when you get up and you use the bathroom, your urine is more concentrated, right? You see that. You can experientially see that happen. And there are so many metabolic processes that take place while you're sleeping, a huge house cleaning. One of the things is your glial cells in your brain that are really, it's a kind of a shout out to the glymphatic system, which is your extracellular waste management system, is one of its roles. But the glymphatic—
I know about the lymphatic system. You said the glymphatic system?
The glymphatic system.
What is that?
So this is run by the glial cells, but there's this interesting association. And some people don't believe that this exists, by the way, the blood-brain barrier.
Okay.
And I know some scientists are going to be like, who thinks that doesn't exist? But in reality, there is a different operating system happening in your brain than the rest of your body. And this is just logical. You know, your brain even has certain gates, for example, that allows in glucose. When you eat a meal with sugar in it, your brain will functionally, this is according to researchers at Harvard, will pull in about 50% of that glucose or that sugar that you just consumed from any given meal. A lot of that's getting shuttled to your brain, thus creating insulin resistance in the brain and leading to, now Alzheimer's is being labeled as type 3 diabetes, right? We have an epidemic of Alzheimer's, and it's a big driving force of that is our abnormal way that we're eating. And so just to circle it all back with water and hydration, all of these processes I just named are all happening in a water medium. And when we really just boil down to the nuts and bolts of nutrition, for me, first and foremost, understanding that the glymphatic system is, let me give an example. So this glymphatic system that's cleaning house, because you have billions of neurons, all right, that are doing processes, and there's going to be waste. There's going to be recycled cells. There's going to be all kinds of things. The glymphatic system is 10 times more active when you're asleep than when you're awake. All right. And so there's a lot of house cleaning. And another link to dementia and Alzheimer's is an inability of the brain to clean itself. All right. So now we're stacking conditions against ourselves, right? And so when we're deprived on sleep, but we're talking about hydration right now, it can be a problem. And so when you get up in the morning, you are dehydrated. This is a great time to help to flush out those metabolic wastes. Give your lymphatic system, your glymphatic system, an assist. You know, help the process to help to flush out these metabolic waste products, get a clean slate, and take your inner bath to start the day. And so I recommend anywhere from 16 to 32 ounces within the first 30 minutes of getting up. That one thing does such a number for our metabolic wellness. And I'll share one more thing. There's this process called water-induced thermogenesis. All right. And I talked about this in Eat Smart as well. But the researchers found that consuming 17 ounces of water is what they use in this study. Within, we'll just say, again, within 10 minutes, was enough to generate a burning of fuel or caloric burn of calories from your body of 30 calories just by drinking water, right? So it's turning up this thermogenic activity by drinking, again, just 17 ounces of water.
Wow.
And we could just be like, well, this is just from the body heating the water up. It's not just that. It's making everything work better, right? Versus the alternative, which is most people in our society today are chronically dehydrated.
That's interesting. I have Robbie Robinson, 76-year-old bodybuilder, legendary guy on. And we train a lot at Venice and Gold's Gym in Venice. And he always says, Prince, water builds muscle. He's like, Prince, people want to lose weight, they got to drink more water. It's like water is life. It's so important, but it's so many different waters out there. What type of water should we be drinking?
All water is not the same, for sure. Mm. And part of the, it sounds strange even for me to say it, because it was drilled into me and pretty much everybody so much in school that water is H2O, right? H2O, that's it. It's water is water. But you will never find pure H2O in nature anywhere.
Wow.
It doesn't exist. All right. It's water is known as the universal solvent because it's always combining with things that are in its environment, right? Whether it's, you know, salt or whether it's Kool-Aid, right? Water is going to integrate with it. And so it's able to combine with more things than practically, you know, anything that we've discovered. That's why it's called universal solvent. Mm. And so, you know, with this being said, in nature, you're going to find water plus minerals.
Mm-hmm.
That's what our ancestors were striving to find, a spring or a safe source of water. And that's where we set up, you know, the community, the civilization.
Mm.
And today, however, you know, we have so many advances in how we can extract water. Now, this gets into the conversation about what's ideal, right? So we obviously want our water to be safe. So many people even today are dying because of having a lack of clean water. The ideal source of water that our bodies are most acclimated to, because water is also information. It's carrying information. You know about Masaru Emoto's work and the hidden messages of water. Water can be used in all kinds of technologies. Water does have a form of memory storage capacity and conductivity and all these things. With that being said, ideally, we're going to have water that has been integrated with minerals naturally.
Yeah.
And so that's going to come through springs, right? Spring water. Basically, that water has gone through the Earth's filtration system, right? And we think about this really immaculate process of how that water got there, right? Through, again, thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years, really, of this hydrological cycle and integrating itself, going through this filter. And they're in these underground lakes called aquifers. And for a spring, this is when the water finds its pathway back to the surface and presents itself for life to consume, essentially. So that's spring water. That's the ideal source. There's going to be inherent fear sometimes about, is this safe if you go to a spring? Because we're used to getting our water, you know, from Nestle, you know, saying in a plastic bottle with, you know, the estrogens, you know, we can get it to that. Because we're so disconnected. We don't trust ourselves. We don't trust nature. There are going to be microorganisms. That's normal. And your body is probably going to be better off from associating with them. You're not going to get sick. For the most part, there are some springs that might be high in certain things. Like there's lithium springs in Missouri that we used to go to. And man, like, it's not an everyday drinking water.
Okay.
At first, you feel amazing. It's just like, it should be illegal, essentially. Like, you're not supposed to feel this good from drinking water. Like, I feel so clear and I feel so, like, connected, you know? It's just like, it's hard to explain. And people used to come from all over the world to go to that spring. You know, it was like this storied prize thing. Now it's just like this kind of shanty little barrier over the top of it. Nobody in town knows about or uses it. Kids, when we would go and fill up bottles, the little kids in the neighborhood, they might bring like a little pail or something and play in it, you know.
There was a New York Times article a few years ago about why it was titled, Should Everybody Be Taking a Little Lithium? And it cited certain studies that they've done of lithium in water systems and lowering suicide rates.
And depression.
And depression, So lithium is it's an incredible mineral.
Yeah, but now we get into the synthetic version of things versus the naturally occurring thing. And again, and also who's profiting from that. And, you know, the list goes on and on and on. So treating our water system, which, for example, fluoride is used as a treatment mm-hmm. in our water today,
yep.
in municipal water. And there's a significant amount of data now, like peer-reviewed, published in prestigious medical journals about concerns over having too much fluoride. Conditions where, because fluoride is, it's proposed, the reason it's in our water supply to make our, you know, our teeth healthy.
Clean, yeah.
Right? Mm. But we know that fluoride is close to, our teeth are essentially bones that you could see, right? And so if it's affecting your teeth, it's affecting your bones.
Mm.
And we have this fluorosis process where we have the chipping of teeth or the chipping of bones. Your bones break easier.
Mm.
I broke my hip at track practice, right?
Mm.
And the thing, all we knew was fluoridated water. That's all we knew. We were just drinking stuff out the faucet. Could that have been a contributor? You know, we don't know if we're not running studies on this to find out.
Wow.
But we do know that it can create patches and weak spots in our teeth. And so that's one thing. And also a big concern in some communities is the impact on fluoride with the brain and the pineal gland in particular, right? So there's like a calcification process, and then also, you know, the overabundance of fluoride being kind of, the human body is so interesting in where certain minerals will hold up shop. Because even your heart's needs are different from your liver's. Like your heart will rapidly consume a lot of the magnesium you consume. And magnesium has been used in, for example, even open heart surgeries a lot, just to, you know, make sure the heart keeps beating. All right. And so this conversation I had with Dr. Oz, he just enlightened me to that. I was like, you know what? Dang, like I never thought about that. Because I was sharing with him some data on magnesium and heart health. He's like, yeah, we use it in surgery.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's this attractive force with the pineal gland. And this is going to be a potential for messing up your sleep quality and melatonin secretions and all kinds of other stuff. And melatonin is a very powerful anti-cancer thing that our bodies produce.
Yep.
So here we go. We've got spring water top tier.
Okay.
The next tier is going to be well water, where you drill down into the aquifer.
Okay.
But it hasn't gone through the earth's, like that reoccurrence, like nature hasn't presented it.
Mm.
And this is what humans are doing today. Like we'll go to a town that is lacking clean water, drill down, create a well. That water is well. You know what I mean? It's okay. It's good. And it's definitely ideal compared to people going down where, you know, the animals, you know, everybody's, you know, rhinos and crocodiles and all this stuff. And it's just collective thing. And there's feces and all the things.
Coli, yeah.
Yeah. So you obviously want to, that's a huge upgrade. So I'm not trying to water that down. Damn, I didn't even mean, I didn't mean to do
it. You're a comedian. I didn't mean to do it.
But, you know, so well water would be ideal. Then what about our day-to-day lives, municipal water supply? If you don't get a water filter, you become the filter. You are the filter. And right now, I shared this study as well in the book. There was a nationwide study of municipal water supplies from coast to coast, from California to New York. And they found dozens of pharmaceutical drug residues in municipal water supply coming right out of your tap in your kitchen or your bathroom or your shower. Right? Dozens. So antidepressants, chemotherapy medications, you know, NSAIDs. And the question is, how the hell is this in our water supply? And it's just this, we're part of nature. You know, humans are consuming these things and they're metabolized, they're pissing out, excreting these.
From agriculture too, right?
Yes. Because we're using some of this wastewater to grow food as well. Right. And that can sometimes, depending on where you are, have an easier path into the water treatment facility. We don't have technology to remove that stuff yet. Right. And so, again, you become the filter.
Wow.
To mention the heavy metals, not to mention, you know, the things that are used in the water, but it's without informed consent because people don't know the potential risk with fluoride, for example. Not saying that fluoride can't be beneficial, but you've got to understand, like, if you're drinking 2 gallons a day, like some people, that's their goal, like a gallon of water a day, for example, of fluoridated supplement water.
Wow.
Could that be a problem? Plus the chlorine added. It's a primary treatment mechanism. And again, we probably want that versus consuming something that can make you blatantly sick. Versus a potential slow death or slow destruction of your microbiome, for example. Because chlorine is a very strong antibiotic.
Oh, yeah.
It's a killer. And your microorganisms living in your gut, these are very, very, very tiny microorganisms, you know? And so they're going to be at the mercy of the stuff that we're putting in there. So with that said, ideally, you want to get a reverse osmosis system.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I did this initially,
yeah.
You know, almost 20 years ago. When I found out about this stuff, I went and got a Brita water filter.
Okay.
If you read it, it says remove the smell and taste of chlorine. It does not remove chlorine.
Not actual
and
chlorine.
Brita is made by Clorox.
Come on. True, no way.
True story.
Wow.
True story. And so it's kind of like, but it does have like something to kind of mimic the Earth's, you know, like the sedimentary layer and all this stuff.
Right.
So it's cool. It is cool. But
ideally, you want to reverse osmosis.
Reverse osmosis.
Okay.
But now, reverse osmosis is creating essentially H2O.
Yeah.
Blank water.
Nothing in it.
Right? And so we need to give that water some structure.
Mm.
Give it some information.
Mm.
There's some data on consuming distilled water and reverse osmosis water without minerals and leaching, the potential for leaching, like taking things from you versus adding to you, right? And I think it's very minuscule. It is. Mm-hmm. But it's a concern for people. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just like, why not do the best thing? You know, so if you're doing reverse osmosis or distilling your water, then I highly recommend adding back some high quality salts.
Okay.
You know, so humans forever, you know, for thousands of years have prized salt. Mm-hmm. Salt was even used for salary. The word salary is derived from salt.
Interesting. Really?
Right? Yeah, yeah. So this was something that people were getting paid for. You ever seen those goats that are like hanging out on the side of dams, like risking their lives and doing all this crazy stuff? They're trying to get a lick of some minerals.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's such a valuable thing in the animal kingdom. And again, we separate ourselves mentally from it, but you know, it's such a valuable thing. So there's Hawaiian black salt, there's Celtic sea salt, there's, you know, Himalayan pink salt, you know, there's so many different salts and or adding back some, you know, some essence from fruits and vegetables as well, because there's electrolytes and salts in there as well.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Okay. All right. That makes sense. Reverse osmosis, well, actually spring water, if you can, then reverse osmosis and
well
add
water.
In
spring water,
well water. Water, then
that's artesian water. If you ever hear artesian water, that's well water.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that. Okay, okay. And lastly, the RO with added minerals or fruit.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. All right, beautiful. So, Sean, I want to get into some interesting topics with you, controversial topics with you, one of which, going back to food, you're an expert in food, you're an expert in health and nutrition. When we look at where most people get their information from, they get it from Instagram, a lot, you know, certain influencers, like people might have been getting information from the Liver King, who recently came out and they said his physique wasn't actually because of he was eating, you know, bull testicles. It was from steroid use. So people get information from Instagram, but there's fact checking on politics, but when it comes to health stuff, not as much. But then you go to government and some people get their information from the CDC and these organizations. And we all know that that might not be the most ethical or forthright source to get information from. Then they go, okay, all right, well, what about my doctor? Can I at least get information from my doctor? And, you know, you look at a lot of physicians, I think almost 50% are overweight. The number one disease for physicians, like all of us, is heart disease. That's how most physicians die. So I guess what I'm trying to say is there's so much out there, so many different perspectives, so many diets. You got carnivore, you got keto, you got go back, you got Atkins, you got this and that. I think there was a poll that came out that said many people are overweight and just too confused to do anything about it. So, Sean, I say all that to ask, what the heck do we do when it comes to getting solid information for our health and longevity of ourselves and our families?
It's incredibly simple. Just listening to the advice of our ancestors. What have humans been doing the longest? What got us to this place? You know, that is the best piece of advice you can give yourself and create a conscious or intentionally created bias. If something doesn't fit into that, be skeptical of it, but still be open to it. Because again, showers were not normal, you know what I'm saying, 200 right. years ago. And, you know, people were still hooking up and probably some crazy smells. You know what I mean?
Never thought about that.
A shower can be a great innovation. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. But everything can be taken too far as well. You know, some people are so obsessed with cleanliness, they're wiping away their microbiome that's protective and that it allows feedback for interacting with other people and having a healthy matchup of pheromones and attractiveness and all
so
these
you,
other things.
And not to deviate, but hand sanitizer. You've got some interesting thoughts on that, on the Purell and the hand sanitizer. What are your thoughts?
I mean, again, this is a huge moneymaker. It's a big industry, and their bottom line has skyrocketed. They've made so much money the last few years. Mm. And for me, again, it's having, my intention even in the beginning of all the dissonance was just for us to not venture into a place of idiocy and start doing self-harm under the guise of protecting oneself. Because our skin is intelligent. It's the outermost portion actually of our nervous system. And it is remarkably complex, and we come in with a blunt instrument in the form of really dense alcohol-based compounds with a myriad of other toxic substances. And alcohol is also something that is, it's a driver. It drives things into your skin. By doing this practice, for a lot of people, and I just saw it, I was just at my youngest son's basketball game, people break out the hand sanitizer. You know, a kid was coughing over in the corner, squirt, squirt, and it's just become second nature. And the ramifications, and of course, there are plenty of examples of damage, you know, people's hands being physically damaged by utilizing these hand sanitizers too often. But also this is the bottom line. This is the most important part. By damaging the protective layer that exists on our hands, we become far more susceptible to things getting into our skin.
Wow.
Right? Ironically, like, so now truly, if you're not continuously 10, 15, 20 times a day hitting this Purell or, you know, this hand sanitizer, your skin is constantly more vulnerable to allowing in, you know, all manner of pathogens.
Wow. That which is meant to protect us is actually weakening us.
Absolutely. Wow. Now, the context, again, everything has its place.
Yeah.
If you were just out, you know, you were at the gym and you just saw the guy, he just walked out, he just took a deuce.
Yeah.
And he's just all over the barbells and, you know, you using a barbell, you know. It's of course, and you're now you're shaking people's hands, all the things, and you want to, you know, now everybody's like getting some chips and guac, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you hit sparingly. You know what I mean? Okay. So there's a context for all of this, but what we've become as a society is we've lost a lot of our basic understanding of health and our connection to nature and the natural world, you know? And we know this, we are in the world. We want to be in the world, but not of the world. Mm. Of course, we can be aware and have all of these other practices, but we still live here. Mm. And the truth still, whether we understand it or not, is that we are a part of life.
Yeah.
Every single thing going on in this universe is affecting us. We have a 24-hour solar day that is affecting, we have chronobiology is the latest, like hottest, fastest growing science. And how what time of day it is affects your hormone production, you know, your neurotransmitters, your digestion, you know, all of this, every single thing about you is affected by what time of day it is. And the more you're disconnected from nature, hiding out in our rooms, hiding out in our homes, in our office buildings, the more that clock gets out of sync and disease and dysfunction takes hold. That's number one, man. Creating a cognitive bias to like, what have we been doing longest?
Yeah.
You know, to get us here as a species and develop this highly complex brain. Mm. It didn't just happen. Mm-hmm. We've had this same brain for tens of thousands of years. And that was evolved on, and by the way, this is another really important piece. Your brain is made from the food that you eat. Every single cell in your body, when you look in the mirror, you're seeing the food that you've eaten. It's so powerful, right? And so what are you making your brain out of? This highly complex structure, Masaru Emoto, modern day Einstein, he gets that label. He said that the human brain is the most complicated object in the known universe. It is powerful beyond measure. It is so incredible. And we all have one. That's the coolest part is like we all have one of the most complex objects in the known universe.
The only organ to name itself. Wow.
But here's the thing. We don't have an instruction manual or guidance on it. And so following that template, what have our ancestors done historically? And this is the principle, is they've eaten real food.
Yeah.
You know, real food, earth-grown nutrients, things that are close to nature, right? Whether this is plant or animal matter, this is what we evolved with. Mm. We don't need to get into politics about it. Just be honest about it. Mm. You can't, well, you can, of course. You could be idealistic. You can make up stuff. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, our species evolved as omnivores, eating all kinds of stuff, but in close proximity to nature. A Twinkie, or, you know, Little Debbie snack cakes and Fruit Loops and, you know, all of this stuff. These are all newly invented things by food scientists and chemists using a gas chromatograph and identifying certain flavors. And I could break this whole thing down. It's an abomination. Mm. But this makes up the majority of the average person's diet today. Yeah. And this is in the BMJ, the average American's diet adult is upwards of about 60% ultra processed foods today. Right. Wow. For children, it's far worse. This was published in JAMA. I'm on a huge mission to educate people about this. Nearly 70% of our average children's diet in the United States is made of ultra processed foods now.
70%.
Yeah. So it's 67% right now. And we jumped just in the last 20 years. It was already an, you know, outrageous 61%. Now it's 67%. Mm. And so number one, what did our ancestors do? Eat real food. Mm. And number two, there are going to be different diet frameworks and perspectives, and that's wonderful. That's wonderful. This is, all of us are very unique. Mm. We all have a unique metabolic fingerprint. And with that said, certain diets are going to work for certain people. And you mentioned earlier in our conversation about the blue zones. The diets of people living at these various blue zones are very different, right? And that's not talked about enough. It's just like we get a vanilla perspective of what that is. Mm. But the humans are traditionally eating foods that are in their environment or that are indigenous kind of to where they are, right? Life is presenting, nature has been presenting foods that the human, that our genes have become acclimated to associating with in a healthful manner, right? We haven't had time to acclimate accordingly to Cool Ranch Doritos. You know what I'm saying? Again, we can eat them, but what is going to be the genetic, these are all epigenetic, or should we give it its proper name, nutrigenetic, nutrigenomic influences. Hmm. We have entire fields, so much data on this now, but the average person doesn't know because they're just trying to feel good. And so the Liver King is going to come along, you know, it looks like, you know, idealistically, you know, a young guy with obesity skyrocketing, in particular an adolescent, young men. And they see that and they're like, oh yeah, like there's I want to do what that guy's doing, you know? And that's, we do want to model health, but what I would implore people to do is to listen to your inner guidance system, most importantly. And for most of us, because we're so externally based and we're just inundated with all this stuff on social media, we have such a just swipe culture, next. Yeah. We don't allow ourselves to think and to go within and to listen to this inner information, this inner guidance system that's screaming at you like, hey, this guy's lying. We all know if something, like there's an inherent thing to know, like something's off here, right? And so not to say that this person's bad or that, you know, anybody who is saying something you disagree with is bad. Mm. It's not about that. It's not about labeling that. Mm. It's about what feels good and feels right for you right now. Mm. And giving yourself permission to change as things change. Mm. Absolutely, look for models. But most importantly, you are the most important voice in your choices. Mm. And no one else is like you. That program that worked for them is probably going to be slightly different from you long term. In the short term, we can get a lot of results just by trying something different.
Yeah.
Because the human body is always looking to acclimate, to find homeostasis. Mm. And so when you throw a new thing in there, you're going to see results. Mm. You know, and so stay open to that. Keep yourself open to a diversity of inputs and communities and teachers and all the things. Mm. Try not to be dogmatic.
Yeah.
Try not to vilify people who are doing something different than you so we can all have healthier conversations.
Yeah, that vilification happens a lot. I like that. It's listening to the wisdom of the ancients and the wisdom of yourself, the gut feeling, the go with your gut. I think it's super important. And in order to do that, we got to be putting good things into our gut to build that healthy microbiome system so we make better decisions. Sean, in the time that we have, which is a few minutes, I wanted to ask you about supplements. The supplement industry is a $40 billion industry. Some people say that supplements are great. Supplements can, you know, change your life. other people, you know, I've been to physicians who say supplements, don't even worry about them. What do you think about supplements? Are we taking supplements, just creating expensive pee? Or do supplements really have an impact on our health?
Just listen to the name of it. It's supplement. It's a supplemental thing. It's an add-on. It's an addition. It's a complement. The foundational focus for us as a species needs to be real food, where oftentimes supplements are derived in some form or fashion from Earth, even in synthetic forms. We talked a little bit earlier about synthetic vitamin C being so, it's one of the biggest selling things in its standalone form, but also in multivitamins.
Yep.
And that synthetic form of it is derived, the vast majority of it, from genetically modified cornstarch and corn syrup. Does that speak health? You know, these are all like terms that should put up a red flag.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's matching up, again, looking through the lens of biochemistry, which we have this thing, you know, there was this moniker, Better Living Through Science. And my, it's not an argument, but my turn towards reality is that everything is science.
It's not better,
we were science before, you know, when people were, you know, hunting and foraging and all that. This is all science too, you know, but because it's the lab, like, this is science, you know? And so when we can identify, like I mentioned earlier, a gas chromatograph, right? So this was an invention where scientists found out, okay, these flavors that we experience when we eat certain foods, that's all chemistry. It's just a certain formula. It's a certain equation. It's a certain, it's a certain outline of certain compounds and molecules. And we can take that, we can extract that combination, that that basically, we'll call it a sentence or a string of information. So we have a strawberry and we found out the formula that gives strawberry this particular notes. We could take that formula now and we can add that to cereal. We could take that formula, we can add it to soda. Now we don't just have soda water, we have strawberry soda. Now, here's the thing, it's not gonna taste exactly like it, right? But it's just enough to muddy up the waters, right? To give you a sensation like, oh, this is an orange soda, this is an orange this, this is orange that. No orange necessary, because we cracked the code on flavors, right? And so, but here's the problem. We evolved with this really intelligent system of biological feedback. So historically, when we would consume a flavor, it came along with certain nutrients. Right? So it's post-ingestive feedback is the term for it. And so now you're consuming a thing with a certain flavor cascade that's no longer coming along with those nutrients. It's going to create inherent biological confusion. And so now when you're getting a craving for a certain thing, what would naturally drive you to go and eat certain, this certain thing to give your body the magnesium it needs, the zinc, the, you know, the copper, or whatever it is, we, you know, pop in again, diet soda and a sandwich, right? And so we're getting the sensation of having something in our system, but we're going to continue to be hungry and have cravings because we're not actually giving our bodies what it's asking for, what it's screaming for, right? Because of all of this flavor confusion. To put all of this together in a nutshell, our bodies are immaculately intelligent. Our ability to relate and interact with food and with nature is so profound, so powerful. But when we're adding in all of these newly invented things, it could throw off the system. And so to answer the question on supplements, after we check the box, having a diet that's foundational on real food, there is going to be a dramatically less need to buy a $50 supplement or whatever the case might be. All right. So with that said, there is absolutely a place. We, again, we can look at, quote, better living through science and chemistry and do some things that can have high leverage. For example, having a concentration of omega-3 fatty acids, which this is in the top five nutrient deficiencies in our society. And some data that was using fMRIs, and I talked about this in Eat Smarter as well. The scientists used fMRIs to look at humans' brains, and they found that people who had the lowest intake of omega-3 fatty acids had the, highest rate of brain shrinkage. The brain volume, they were losing volume of their brain. And it was 4 grams a day. Today, it's not necessarily going to be an easy go for people to get in 4 grams of DHA. In particular, it was DHA. And so having a supplement can help in that process. And here's the key words, real food-based or whole food-based supplements. Right? So this isn't synthetic. This is from a real food, and it's in a concentrated form. You know, the same thing holds true for vitamin C. We can have concentrates of, quote, superfoods like camu berry, amla berry, acerola cherry, that have not just the vitamin C content. By the way, Dr. Duke, who worked for the USDA, he became like an obsessed and an expert in botanicals.
Okay.
Because he saw some of the data that the popular kind of government institutions were pushing into culture was not, we were seeing more sickness. It's just like something's not working here. And he found that camu berry, he was really one of the pioneers of this, is it has about 700% of your RDA vitamin C in just like half of a teaspoon.
No way.
Like just a tiny amount. This just blows away most other things.
Wow.
Right? But it also has all of the other cofactors, you know, these kind of biopotentiators that actually allow your cells to recognize it versus this blunt instrument in the form of vitamin C, synthetic vitamin C that, as I shared with you earlier, we have peer-reviewed data, prestigious medical journals, showing 2.5 times higher incidence of developing kidney stones by consuming synthetic vitamin C. Supplements can supplement an already real food or healthy nutrition protocol. Use whole food-based supplements.
Yeah.
And you'll have a great combination.
What do you take? What supplements do you take?
I listen to my body. It's the ultimate thing. And this is tough. I listen to my body, but also I also go on my life experiences, right? So if I know, for example, I've been doing a lot of things that maybe my body has a little bit more inflammation.
Yeah.
I've got a turmeric supplement, right?
Okay.
It's a concentration. It's a whole food organic version of turmeric, concentrated. It has the curcumin, all these things that are, again, studied, so many studies now on its anti-inflammatory capacity, but it's also anti-cancer. It's an anti-angiogenesis, one of the few foods discovered that can cut off the blood supply to cancer cells. Wow. So that is way different than this blunt instrument, right? Of something taking an NSAID or, you know, some anti-inflammatory thing. Right. So I'm getting the anti-inflammatory thing plus all this other great stuff, right? Because it's a real whole food. So occasionally I'll do that.
But you listen to your body. You don't do this stuff religiously. Like you don't have a stack of magnesium at, you know, before sleep or when you wake up, you don't take like a D or K2 or you just listen to your body. You're tuned in to how you feel physically, emotionally, mentally. And then you have a pharmacy.
Yes, that part, and also begin paying attention to what's going on in my life. For example, like maybe if I'm traveling, for example, I'll up the whole food forms of vitamin C.
Okay.
Right? So camu berry, amla berry, but these are, you can get supplements that are concentrates of these things.
Interesting.
I am a fan of supplementing DHA and EPA, omega-3s for most people. Magnesium is the number one mineral deficiency in our society today. About 56% of Americans are chronically deficient in magnesium. Magnesium is responsible for over 600 biochemical processes that we are aware of, about 625. So this means your body can't do certain things without it, or can't do them efficiently. You know, a lot of them have to do with the parasympathetic nervous system, relaxation, muscle function, cognitive function. But you can also get magnesium. And magnesium, by the way, is a salt. There's different salt. We just think of sodium as a salt. There's magnesium salt, there's calcium salt. These are under the guise of these electrolytes. That's another thing that we can supplement today. But the supplementation can be as easy as a high quality salt, or when you are supplementing electrolytes, making sure if you can, that they're coming from an ethical place, right? So they're earth grown, naturally derived combinations of electrolytes. Electrolytes are essentially minerals that carry an electric charge.
Okay.
So they enable your cells to have signal transduction to talk. They're
See, that's
important.
Why I love you, man, because you just break it down. I never heard that. Like, I know electrolyte, potassium, magnesium, sodium, but it carries an electrical charge, of course.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's so remarkable. And again, all of this stuff is occurring in nature. And we keep trying to trump the system and find a way to like do something better. And we get into that place where people are going and getting this hot supplement and missing out on the 99% of what gets you results and trying to lean onto this one thing. That's the problem, you know? So it's not a problem. The one thing, you know, this 1% isn't a problem. But if you have that 1%, like that gives you that extra, that tiny little bit of edge versus, you know, most people are becoming reliant on those things just to get by. You know? And so, that's, it's really simple when it boils down to it with our uses of supplements. You know, look for earth-grown nutrients, concentrations of whole foods. But we've got to really shift our focus to getting a lot of these quote, supplemental nutrition, nutrients from real food.
Awesome. Love it. All right, let's have a little rapid fire thing. That's first question. Three foods we should not be eating.
McDonald's French fries. I don't want to actually, let me not throw labels out because I was going to, but I'm going to throw this one out since I was going to say Intamin's, you know, pastries.
I used to eat those a lot.
Man, I would go to the outlet. You remember the Hostess outlet was in St. Louis?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so I go there, man. But I'm just, in particular, all of this concentrated, you know, sugar and refined starch and also all the preservatives and the things like that. I'm not a guy who's like, don't ever do. Even as I said, the McDonald's thing, like, if you're in a bind, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So be it, and I don't want you to place a feeling of guilt, but they're very, very unhealthy.
Yeah.
The last one would be, this is very difficult. And I'm just certain foods, Pop-Tarts, all right? So McDonald's fries, Intamin's and Pop-Tarts.
Okay, all right. That'll work. Three kind of biohacks that feel illegal to know.
Getting sunlight in the morning. Just getting outside, even on a overcast day, just getting outside. I do this every day. I've been doing it for, I don't even know how long. I'll just get outside and go for a 10-minute walk every morning.
Wow.
Without fail, even when it's raining. I mean, every, let's say 365 days, I'll do a 360.
Okay, okay.
Right? Every now and then, I'll just get on like a vibration plate, but it's still outside. I'll do something.
Gotcha. Outside with the sun.
And so it's, you don't have to, you know, I'm not talking about staring into the sun.
Yeah,
I'm
just
talking about the ambient light. Those biophotons help to sync up this chronobiology, right? So these clocks within every cell in our bodies. I remember in school hearing the term circadian rhythms, and it sounded like a horoscope or something. Mm-hmm. Like, what? But today we know that these circadian clocks are functional genes. These are genes and proteins. In every cell in our body, and they're constantly trying to sync up with our environment, right? So that would be number one. Number two would be play.
Big one.
Playing more. I just, my youngest son just had a basketball game. It's his first season playing. And, you know, him and his team, I mean, they went off. They were doing their thing. It was really cool to see. After the game was over, all the parents dispersed, except a few kind of hung out, we'll just say like four parents. I was the only one hooping with the kids afterwards. We're having a good time. You know, I was giving these kids an opportunity to like challenge themselves after they just spanked these kids, you know, like play me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but also giving them the encouragement, all this stuff. And so I don't think about that stuff often, but I just thought about it because you brought it up. Like, where's an example where I'm playing with the kids and doing what would be considered, you know, kid stuff or making myself look a certain way? And so we have a culture of this, and you know this with my family. You know, we're always, you know, just having fun. And I'm grateful that I've instilled it in my family. There's, and as far as the longevity benefits, the benefits with our cardiovascular system. One of the things in particular, I just shared, it's actually coming out this week, and I don't know when this is coming out, but I did a masterclass on the impact that love has on our health.
Wow, beautiful.
And so I had this conversation with Dr. Robert Waldinger out of Harvard, and he had the longest running longitudinal study on human longevity, and he shared with me the number one thing, taking in all the confounding factors possible, diet, exercise.
This is the Grant study or something different?
This is the essentially human longevity study.
Okay.
Right? It's been 85 years.
And a Harvard Grant study. Maybe it's another one, parallel.
They combined two studies together, so maybe it might be a part of it. But the number one marker for longevity was relationships. Right? The number one thing, and he's like, his fellow colleagues, like, we didn't want to believe it. Like, it doesn't make sense. But then he's like, it did make sense because it's a stress reliever, right? And all of the chemistry that comes when you have warm relationships. Yeah. And I'm telling you, there are a few ways better to connect with people than through play. And you learn a lot about people too. You learn a lot about their personalities. And I saw that with the kids. Like, I knew who the tough kid was, the resilient, the most resilient kid. I knew who he was. I knew who the kid who was building confidence, but still uncertain, right? And I knew the kid who was a scrapper who was willing to do whatever it takes. Even though it hasn't played out in their life yet, I could already kind of see those things. And I could speak to that personality.
Yeah, you know? If you look in the animal kingdom, even adult animals, they play. They love to play. We're just so, as adults, human adults, we're just so uptight. And
we say it, stop playing. Grow up, you know?
Wow.
So that would be the other one. And also, again, just the biochemistry, testosterone is going to go up. Mm. This is important for men and women. And this is another thing, a break of paradigm here. Mm. Unfortunately, a lot of people have not been privy to this information, but if we're talking about the amount, the sheer amount of biochemistry or hormones in women, testosterone is the most dominant. Mm. Women have more testosterone than any other circulating hormones.
Wow, okay.
Right? So do they have more estrogen than men? Yes. Do men have more estrogen more testosterone than women? Yes. Huh. But testosterone is important for all of us, right? So testosterone, oxytocin goes up, right? This bonding hormone, right? This is tied to longevity as well. It has relaxation and anti-inflammatory qualities as well. The list goes on and on. So wow. Play would be the second biohack.
Beautiful.
Third one, this did turn into, this was not rapid fire. Third one would be, I'll just tell you, man, for real, sleep.
I was going to say, sleep.
It's the most powerful of of any type of intervention. Mm. There's nothing more powerful than sleep. Wow. There's no supplement. There's no lifestyle factor. There's no biohack. There's nothing that can outperform high quality sleep. You get so much from it. When I talked about testosterone, there was this recent study that was done and it utilized young healthy men, and they sleep deprived them for, you know, just about a week. And they had them to get it was under 6 hours of sleep. Mm-hmm. And in that study period, their testosterone dropped by 10 to 15%. Now that it might not sound like a lot, but what it was equivalent to was as if they were suddenly 20 to 30 years older.
Wow.
All right. Wow. Testosterone directly, it's like a charging station. Hmm. When you go to sleep, it's like your Tesla getting connected, charging up your testosterone. There is a direct connection. And as you're up during the day, testosterone is just going down. Mm. Except we could do stuff to have little spurts of it, but nothing compares to sleep for your immune system, the immunomodulation, your cognitive ability. Man, like I can go on and on and on. Mm. You know, it is the ultimate. Mm. And if we respected that and understood that as a culture, put more value around that, we would be living much more vibrant, healthy, enjoyable lives in our waking hours.
Wow. Beautiful. I always say sleep your way to success.
Facts.
That's the way to do it. Quick game. This game is called Best Ever. What's the best advice you ever got?
I would have to say the thing that consciously changed my life the most was my mother-in-law when she said that if she could give the world one thing, it would be meditation. Mm. And at the time, I didn't understand it. I thought she was crazy. I hadn't meditated before. Wow. And so I was like, I literally thought when she said, if I can give the world one thing, it would be meditation. I thought mentally, I didn't say it, but I was like, give me $1 million. Like, what are you talking about? If you're gonna give the world something, give them some money. Mm. And I was just so ignorant. And I didn't know what I was in store for. You know, the reason I'm here with you today is because of her, man. Wow. Like she was a part of this process.
Wow.
I got introduced to myself through meditation. Mm. And so that was the first domino when she said this outlandish thing to me, you know, but it made me curious.
Wow.
And her being a teacher, you know, somebody who'd been meditating for decades and also teaching, and connecting my science brain to like these benefits, there was so much that I couldn't explain with words that I got access to. Mm. So that's what it would be.
Best investment you ever made?
My relationship with my wife, by far. It's not even close, not even close.
Best book you ever read?
Oh man, what phase of life? This is so tough. I'll tell you the two. Can I tell you two that's popped up for me?
Yeah.
Power versus Force by Dr. Hawkins.
Yeah. David Hawkins, yeah.
And Everyday Enlightenment by Dan Millman. It brought more practicality to my, you know, what would be put under the umbrella of a spiritual practice.
Beautiful. When was the best time in your life?
Now.
Mm. Best quote you ever heard?
I'm going to paraphrase because there's many different versions of this, but it's from Einstein. He said that the most fundamental decision that we make, the most important decision that we make as a human being is the decision of whether we live in a friendly or hostile universe. I grew up seeing the through the lens of hostility, you know, and I realized that I have a choice.
Wow.
And I started to see things differently, and having that quote is something that I kind of refer back to, especially with all the vitriol, all the stuff that can be happening in the world. Mm. We can become dogmatic. We can become complacent.
Yeah.
We can become argumentative, but it's coming back to a choice that I get to make of whether I live in a friendly or hostile universe. Mm. And having a feeling and a deep-seated belief that the world, life is for me, you know, and not against me.
Mm.
And I get to choose because there's evidence of both at all times, you know what I mean? But making that decision of whether we live in a friendly or hostile universe, that would be it.
It's beautiful. What's your best health practice? Would it be sleep? Prioritize a sleep? Or?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the number one.
It's the number one. It's the number one.
And a final question. It's a question I ask all the guests, and I think I know your answer, but I'm not sure. But if you could wave a magic wand at the world, and when you wake up tomorrow, whatever your wish was would be granted, and the world would be changed in just that manner that you wanted it to be changed in, what would it be?
Oh, man, this is tough, because I'm going to preface this by saying that I don't think that we have the right, you know what I mean? Like, we're robbing the process, you know? So what is beautiful.
Mm.
And if there was one thing, it would be for all of us to recognize our own unique gifts.
Mm.
That would be what I would, if I could wave a wand, it would be that.
Mm.
So we would have so much more self-value and appreciation, so much less, you know, comparison and jealousy and envy, dissonance. If we could, within ourselves, recognize our own unique gifts and talents and capacities, and couple that with being able to see that in other people and appreciate it in other people, I think we would heal so much.
It's a beautiful wish. Wow. Sean Stevenson, what are you working on? What do you got? Where can people follow you? And what's next?
I'm at the final stages. I haven't announced this yet, but I just turned in my third book. It's the Eat Smarter Family Cookbook.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So my first book, Sleep Smarter, came out, I think around, the original iteration came out in 2013, major published version, 2015, 2016, I believe. It's translated in like 22 languages now.
Wow.
And international bestseller, all that good stuff. It helped to shift the culture around sleep wellness that so much are, you know, there's a lot of exposure to it. It was a tough sell, you know, to publishers at the time, because again, that gap, they didn't see it. You know, it's like, well, you know, we really think, you know, like a keto book would be great, or, you know, some kind of a diet framework or fitness or that kind of thing. But, and then Eat Smarter came out in the midst of a lot of craziness the first week of 2021. And it became the number one new release of all books on Amazon, national bestseller, all that good stuff. And it was on there, on the list with Matthew McConaughey and Michelle Obama, all this stuff, the top tier in books sales. But I'm saying this to say, not because this is so special, it's because people are interested. Despite all of the politicization and this appearance that people don't care about their health, people care and people want to feel good. It's just the accessibility of something special and remarkable. And so the Eat Smarter Family Cookbook, I was shocked at, it's a big idea book. And I put very little of my time and energy into as far as like recipes and that kind of thing. It was more of a shift in thinking around food. I was shocked at how many people were posting pictures. Like when, you know, like they were making recipes from the book and making and posting them. I was like, what the? Because we are a visual culture. And I was like, oh, wow. We're still the most transformative thing, even though these ideas are powerful, to be able to take an idea and to actually eat it. That's something totally different, right? So having that experience, because of course we're consuming mentally, we have mental food, but when you physically are eating something, because food isn't just food, it's information, right? It changes you. And so I doubled, tripled down on that part and made some phenomenal, because I'm a huge fan of deliciousness as well as a bridge. And so that's going to be coming out, and my family is involved.
Beautiful.
It's the Eat Smarter Family Cookbook.
Okay.
And what we're focusing on in this book is how eating together with friends and family affects our health outcomes as a species. And I think people are going to, it's gonna shift the culture. It's gonna shift the culture. Because us eating together with others versus being in front of a screen, it's on the endangered species list right now.
Wow.
And I think this book is gonna catalyze us to get connected.
Love it. And where can people follow you? And you got a podcast too, right? Very successful. Like, you know, a lot of people listen to this podcast, right?
It's called The Model Health Show, and it's available wherever you listen to your podcasts. And yes, we're from St. Louis, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's been the number one health podcast in the United States many, many times, which is just bananas.
Such a good show.
And so people can find that anywhere they listen to podcasts. We're on YouTube as well. And people can find, you know, my home online is themodelhealthshow.com. So all this stuff is there. And my social media, I'm at Sean Model on Instagram and on Twitter. I pop in and do a few tweets every now and then. And that's pretty much it, man. That's where people can find me.
Sean, thank you so much for coming on Sauna Sessions. It was good to sweat and to have these beautiful conversations with you. You really, you dropped a lot of jewels on us today. I appreciate it, man.
My pleasure, man. My pleasure.